All right. Deputy Director of the Division of Marine Fisheries, been involved with fisheries management at the state level, interstate level, council level since 1978. Never has anything been so frustrating for me as dog fish management, even ground fish. I never thought I would say that when I first got involved with dog fish management, but indeed it has become the case. As a matter of fact, I became involved in dog fish management by accident. And that's when, maybe in the mid-1990s, late-1990s, John Bryson, who was executive director of Mid-Atlantic Council at the time, said, David, we're having a public hearing in Massachusetts, in Hyannis, on the Spiny Dogfish Plan, as proposed. Would you help us out? Would you chair it? And I said, sure. So I went home, I quickly read the draft plan. I said, what in the world is this all about? How can this possibly be? And it led me down a maze of confusion, surprise, and of course frustration. I'm frustrated, so I can just imagine how frustrated recreational and commercial fishermen are about dogfish at this particular point in time. The title of my presentation is from Shakespeare. It's kind of a play that we're involved in right now, Dogfish Management, ASMFC, Mid-Atlantic Council, New England Council, and, of course, with the involvement of the National Marine Fisheries Service, and surprisingly enough, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Cry havoc and let's slip the dogs of war between the states and NOAA fisheries. That's basically what it has been, a war between the National Marine Fisheries Service and the states, ASMFC specifically. It's not the best way to manage fisheries, clearly. You heard the presentation from Jim regarding the Mid-Atlantic Council. You heard the presentation from Chris regarding ASMFC. We're doing it differently. Somewhat similar, but differently. Different landing limits, different quotas. How in the world did we get to that particular point? And I'll cover that somewhat as we move into this presentation. And I guess the question that I'm asking here, and this is a question that perhaps you've asked, and that's the reason why we're here today at this gathering, it is, are we wedded to a dogfish doomsday scenario? Or will ecosystem-based management spur a new direction for dogfish management and cooperation? The issue of dogfish management and dogfish science came to a head not too long ago, largely because of the efforts of good reporters, good coverage, the Commercial Fisheries News out of the state of Maine. They put out a special report on dogfish management. Some of the research that will be covered this afternoon was highlighted in that particular special report. It generated a lot of interest, certainly in my state and up and down the coast for that matter, from New Jersey, North Carolina, Virginia. A reason for all the concern about dogfish happens to be, well, the same reason that existed way back when Bigelow and Schroeder, I guess that was in the 1950s, when they wrote the famous text, Fishers of the Gulf of Maine. This is a very important quote that I've gone back to time and time again, and fishermen know this to be the truth. Voracious almost beyond belief, the dogfish entirely deserves this bad reputation. Not only does it harry and drive off mackerel, herring, and even fish as large as cod and haddock, but it destroys vast numbers of them. Again and again, fishermen have described packs of dogs dashing among schools of mackerel and even attacking them within the seines, biting through the net. At one time or another, they prey on practically all species of Gulf and Maine fish smaller than themselves, and squid are also a regular article of diet whenever they are found. At first, I thought this was rather dramatic, over the top. Could it really be true? And then through practical experience, I have certainly discovered that it is true. And in working with dogfish in my state throughout the 1990s up until now, I did discover in some old legislative reports of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that we actually had a proposed dogfish eradication program to destroy dogfish. That, I believe, was in the 1960s, and there was one even earlier than that. So this is not new. This is almost cyclical in terms of dogfish abundance being extremely high, fishermen being driven insane by dogfish as they interfere with your operations, destroy your catch, and, of course, severely damage the gear. One reason why I became so interested in dogfish management, apart from the fact that I was asked to chair the public hearing, is that, I read papers, National Marine Fisheries Service papers, Northeast Fisheries Science Center publications in different scientific journals, and this one caught my attention way back in the 1990s. This is by Stephen Morawski, a 1991 paper, Can We Manage Our Multi-Species Fisheries? A very important point that stuck in my mind as I went to public hearing to talk about a management plan that was going to stop the directed fishery for dogfish until the end of time, basically. Whether or not species changes on George's Bank are due to biological interactions among species or are simply due to differential fishing mortality rates remains conjectural. However, total biomass in the system does seem to have again reached the threshold. The ability to increase the abundance of marketed species may must be limited by predation from or competition with the elasmobranch species, meaning skates and dogfish. That caught my attention. Of course, there's a lot more in this paper than this quote. Steve Morawski was, of course, very prominent in the Northeast Fisheries Science Center back then, one of the thinkers, like Paul Rego today, one of the thinkers, one of the dominant, predominant top dogs within the National Marine Fisheries Service Science Center. And then, not too long after that, actually it might have been before, this is a paper called Aggregate Fish Biomass and Yield on George's Bank from 1960 through 1987 by Ralph Mayo, Mike Fogarty, and Fred Cherchuk. Three scientists at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center whose reputation is top-notch and whose opinions I have great respect for. Paul's, I mean, there's great talent at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. So when I saw this paper, published again back in the early 1990s, I believe, I took a note of this important point where they say, I'm just paraphrasing somewhat, however, the increasing biomass of fish-eating fish of little commercial value, particularly dogfish, mackerel, and large skates, may further depress the production levels by increasing predation mortality on both the pre-recruits and recruited components of the principal groundfish populations. The synergistic effects of exploitation and predation can affect the stability and resilience of these populations and result not only in lower levels of production, but increase the probability of a population collapse. In other words, they were saying, there's a relationship here. You have all these elasmobranchs, dogfish, and skates, and you run the risk of not being able to rebuild groundfish. And back then, of course, like now, I was still am involved in ways to try to rebuild groundfish to our target levels to keep mortality under control. So this is first and foremost in my mind, this relationship between dogfish, skates as well, and groundfish, notably codfish. This is an example, of course, of what many fishermen see. Catches of dogfish and otter trawls are high in just about every area, certainly in the inshore portion of the Gulf of Maine. That's the same caught and dumped out. Mixture of codfish and dogfish, you name it, it's a mixed trawl fishery, but oftentimes you'll get nothing but dogfish. And this is an example of one catch in Stellwagen Bank not too long ago, September of 2006. 10,000 pounds of dogfish were taken in 1.3-hour tow on Stellwagen Bank. Typical. Maybe not typical. Actually, larger catches than that were taken on Stellwagen Bank in the sanctuary. Dogfish, extremely abundant. As indicated by one of our speakers this morning, it's not just at one particular point in time during the year. It's not in the spring and the summer and early fall. They're there all the time, it seems, shifting to deeper water perhaps, but ready to come right back into shallow water when the water temperature is right to impede, to interfere with recreational fishermen and commercial fishermen's activities. This is an example of one type of interference with recreational fishing. It's not exactly the sort of a catch that a party boat fisherman or a charter boat fisherman would like to get. Half a codfish, relatively small codfish, which makes sense. In addition to, of course, the catches being damaged, there is the obvious interference with the operation of the party boat catch. When you have many lines in the water with hooks, and you have bait on those hooks, I'm preaching to the choir here, I think. Clearly, the dogfish in the area will take those hooks, and then they move around, and they tangle, and it's just a mess for the party boat, charter boat operation that has paying clients on board, clientele. Gillnet catches, of course. Gillnet fishery in Cape Cod Bay, Massachusetts Bay, exists for dogfish, has for many, many years. And once the codfish are in the nets, of course, they're stressed, and they send out signals, distress signals picked up by sharks. Dogfish specifically, the schools of the dogfish come in, and they do a job on the fish within the net. This is a corn-cobbed codfish, and there's another example of a large codfish that was stripped of its flesh while it was in the net, and of course, the gillnet also had many dogfish in it at the same time. Now, I focus on codfish quite a bit, therefore I'm concerned about dogfish. Why am I focused on codfish? First and foremost, it's extremely important to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, without question. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the commercial fishery in the Commonwealth has succeeded. Codfish, as well as other groundfish. And we have a golden cod hanging in our state legislature, the very famous golden cod, a symbol of the fishing industry within our nation, within our state. Cod, Gulf of Maine, Georgia's Bank, well, it's just had a major influence on the commercial fisheries and the recreational fisheries to a large extent in our state. Codfish, well, off our shores, of course, codfish are abundant. Fortunately, Gulf of Maine Codfish Assessment recently indicated that we're no longer overfished, the Gulf of Maine codfish, but overfishing is still occurring. These are the kinds of catches we're getting with codfish now. That's an interesting one. No, that is not a mouse. That is not a fake codfish. I thought one of my staff was playing a joke on me when they showed this to me, but that's an actual catch. And it was actually kind of representative of the sizes of codfish being caught in certain areas within the Gulf of Maine, certain areas that I had to twist the arm of my staff member to find out where he caught that. He finally did reveal it. But party boat fishermen, charter boat fishermen, of course, recreational fishermen, of course, commercial fishermen, they're extremely interested in codfish rebuilding, and as are we, the fisheries managers, because we try to have high spawning stock biomass, many breeders, and this represents well, the younger the year, codfish, slightly older than the younger ones, the small ones, those larger numbers represent the production from one particular year's worth of reproduction. Spring 2003 through 2005, this is the bottom troll survey, spring, the National Marine Fisheries Service distribution of codfish, and you can see, of course, that in Massachusetts Bay and in Cape Cod Bay, the codfish abundance has been in recent years pretty much there, as well as, of course, on Georgia's Bank. But the hot spot has been Massachusetts Bay and in the Gulf and Cape Cod Bay, and that seems to be where most of the Gulf of Maine codfish right now are concentrated. That concentration of codfish in our waters in that area actually led my agency to take a proactive stance on codfish protection. We actually implemented what is called the Cod Conservation Zone. That was a step taken a few years ago where we have closed down that area, you can see it in green, to recreational and commercial fishing from December 1 through February 28. The purpose of this particular closure was to protect pre-spawning codfish and also, of course, to take fishing pressure off the codfish when they're spawning. And we're hopeful that this will result in some good production, some good year classes, recruits, small codfish. And we have some indication that perhaps this is contributing in a significant way to its increased reproductive success. All right. So, concerned about codfish, concerned about reproductive success, the production of recruits, small codfish. That then leads us to a discussion about codfish and dogfish. What about them? This is the state's inshore bottom troll survey, fall 2005, inside state waters, where you can see the abundance of small codfish, less than 30 centimeters. Those would be the yellow dots. And then spiny dogfish abundance, those are the red dots. You can see where there is very significant overlap between dogfish and the small codfish. Quite a bit of overlap. And those large red dots represent approximately 1,000 dogfish caught per toe, about 1,000 dogfish caught per toe. The intermediate sizes represent about 100 to 1,000 dogfish caught per toe. The larger yellow dots represent about 100 to 500 small codfish caught per toe. So clearly, the inshore portion of the Gulf of Maine represents a very important spot for juvenile codfish. A nursery area, for example, that's what, of course, we believe it to be. Alright, with that understanding, with that overlap of codfish and dogfish, does that mean anything? Well, yes. Another paper written by some other scientists down at the Northeast Fishery Science Center, Jason Link and Lance Garrison and Frank Almeida, three other notables, published in the North American Journal of Fisheries Management, ecological interactions between elasmobranchs and groundfish species on the Northeast U.S. continental shelf, evaluating predation. Boy, was I waiting for this paper. I was waiting for this paper, and it came out of the blue. because I had been told for so many years they only eat comb jellies. They only eat tenophores, really. How does all that protein, all that biomass of godfish come out of a jellyfish, out of a tenophore, which is predominantly water? Well, anyways, to make a long story short, I knew, and you all know, that they eat fish. But for the longest of times, the mantra was, they don't eat fish. They only eat jellyfish. And environmental organizations in particular seized on that, and they still do. They only eat jellyfish. What's the problem? Well, the problem is quite obvious to you, certainly, fishermen, recreational as well as commercial. In that paper, 1998 predation, these are the calculations, these are the estimates. Obviously, you can't say it's concrete, but this is their best attempt to come up with some estimates of consumption of small codfish, okay? Age 1 codfish, they calculate it as a mean or an average. 2.15 million codfish. The range was from 490,000 to about 4.66 million fish. Well, the assessment itself, called the virtual population analysis, the assessment done by the center, indicated that at that time, there was 5.77 million codfish. So you think about that. 5.77 million codfish, and the dogfish, just the dogfish, they ate 2.15 million. Seems like a rather significant amount of age one fish that we're trying to protect in our waters and we're trying to promote. That is, we're trying to promote their successful existence. We're trying to protect them so that they will get into the commercial and recreational fisheries down the road and, of course, contribute to future recruitment to reach adult size and to spawn. Just for your information, since we are down in the mid-Atlantic, they also said at the same time in that same paper, fluke. Ages 0 and age 1 consumed about 20 million fish, range from 4.5 to 43.1 million fish. And oh, by the way, the assessment indicated that ages 0 and 1, about 62.88 million fish. This is a very significant fish-eating predator within the Northeast ecosystem. So, I'm gratified to know that juvenile cod are consumed by dogfish. Northeast Fishery Science Center research has verified that dogfish prey on juvenile codfish. And here's an important point. And the authors of that particular article were very careful to make this point, that because of the distribution of codfish across the shelf and tiny dogfish as well, perhaps that amount of consumption really isn't having that great an effect. But they do say that if the distribution and consumption is localized, they could have an effect. Well, here it is. That's what they say. Although the amount of predation considered by the National Marine Fisheries Service was believed to be minimal when compared to predation on other species, that is, dogfish preying on other species, an annual amount of 2.2 million cod with most seen juvenile fish is consequential. This is my statement. This is my point of view, my position. It is consequential, especially because the predation is likely localized on inshore cod spawning and nursery grounds, Massachusetts Bay, Cape Cod Bay, and probably elsewhere as well in the Gulf of Maine. And who knows what that kind of predation might be on other localized groups of species that are important to mid-Atlantic fishermen. I just threw this one in to make again the point that they do prey on fish. This, I believe, was in that Commercial Fisheries News special report. The green represents their diet of fish. 93%. When they get to be bigger fish, they obviously prey on fish. When dogs are smaller, they tend to prey on other categories of organisms, such as decapods, you know, crabs and what have you. This, I believe, Paul Rago provided at a report in a presentation not too long ago. So I just stole this from you, Paul, and I'm giving you credit because you're sitting here. I would have anyways. But again. Herring, 10.9%, mackerel, 19.1%, flatfish, codfish, other fish, comb jellies, there they are, 14%, tenophores or comb jellies, other invertebrates, 23%. I can't recall whether this is spring or fall data, but anyways, one is spring and one is fall. Same pattern, cod-like fish, flatfish, and then herring as well. All right, so here's the irony, as I see it. We have the irony of having to rebuild dogfish to biomass targets, even though by doing so, we will likely impact efforts to rebuild cod, especially if we are to believe the Northeast Fishery Science Center scientists. Again, that's what they said back in the early 1990s. And I don't know if these particular scientists have changed their point of view. I haven't seen anything to refute those findings that they published in the scientific literature back then. So I hope that they will be in a position with Paul to comment more about this particular point, which is so critical in my state, and I think it's critical up and down the coast. It has tremendous implications for our efforts to rebuild ground fish and other species. So, the Dogfish Management Plan of the New England Council and the Mid-Atlantic Council is a single-species plan with multi-species implications. I'll just show this again because it just dangles me to see what I worked so hard to protect, and potentially it's being decimated by tremendous numbers of dogfish. All right. So these are our views, my views specifically. Gulf of Maine cod rebuilding requirements have impacted Massachusetts fishermen, especially in the nearshore portion of the western Gulf of Maine. Federal restrictions, council restrictions are quite significant in the inshore portion of the Gulf of Maine. Because fishermen will be obliged to fish under existing and proposed new restrictions, chances for cod spawning success, juvenile survival, and rebuilding must be maximized. Stands to reason, but that's critical. We've got to maximize it. Removing dogfish predators. Again, my point of view. Through fishing, even though small scale, no longer do we have landings of 66 million pounds or so with a trawl fleet pursuing the dogfish schools and catching them, with the encouragement of the federal government that occurred back in the 1990s. No longer do we have that. The small scale fisheries, primarily in state waters, I'm not sure what it is up in North Carolina, but anyways, in my state, primarily in state waters, I'm not sure. So I'm saying, removing dogfish predators through fishing, even though small scale, is a precautionary and common sense approach, especially in the context of ecosystem-based fisheries management, and I would hope that the other councils would buy in, both councils would buy into this approach, because it's common sense. And I insist that ecological integrity, which is the buzzword now, we need to protect, strengthen ecological integrity. I suggest that to promote higher ecological integrity, in this particular case of the Massachusetts Bay portion of the Gulf of Maine ecosystem, you have to favor a highly desirable status of the ecosystem, and that's not one dominated by large-scale fish-eating spiny dogfish. Okay. Sea herring. I've spent so much time managing sea herring, I can't tell you how many meetings I've been to try to figure out how to make 45,000 metric tons of a hard quota last for the commercial fishermen, specifically in the Gulf of Maine. Well, okay. Furthering this argument that we need to have higher ecological integrity by allowing a small-scale directed fishery on dogfish, 2,000 pounds, 3,000 pounds, the trip limit, we would contribute towards removal of one of the major predators of sea herring. And according to the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, dogfish consume, well, obviously this is a rough estimate, but they consume about 68,000 metric tons of sea herring annually. Well, the quota is 45,000 in the Gulf of Maine, so you can see the relationship here. Dogfish in the Gulf of Maine, sea herring in the Gulf of Maine, they interact. Sea herring, of course, are eaten by many, many different species, not just dogfish, but dogfish alone eat 68,000 metric tons. So, allowing a small-scale directed fishery is consistent with concerns about herring removals. Now, return to small-scale fishing and the landing and more bycatch. That's what the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has done. Not the National Marine Fisheries Service. The service has a different perspective, as you all know, on dogfish. New assessment information, already highlighted by a number of people here this morning, indicates that dogfish is no longer overfished, and overfishing is not occurring. That information was used by the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission to increase the quota from 6 up to 8 million pounds per current fishing year. That was not well received by the National Marine Fisheries Service. Why would the service receive it in a favorable manner? The quota was 4 million pounds federal quota. The year before, the states were at 6, I believe. Okay, so 4 and 6, so the National Marine Fisheries Service was going to go to 6, they agreed, but the ASMFC took 6 the previous year. You have to take 2 off the top from 6, that brings it back down to 4, so we're at 4. All right, now we're at 8, and the feds are at 4, on paper, that should mean zero, shouldn't it? Still not sure why the National Marine Fisheries Service hasn't gone to a zero quota for the fishing year, because they could if they wanted to. God bless them, they didn't do it. But what's going to happen next year as we continue to get into this payback situation? The ASMFC says you can take 8, the Fed say 4 or 2. Eventually, you know, there's going to be an explosion here, but fortunately ASMFC is in the lead on spiny dogfish management, working with the need for land bycatching, the need to have a small-scale directed fishery, which is a precautionary approach with regards to cod conservation. In other words, in my particular case, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, supporting the dogfish position of ASMFC and promoting it, we are erring on the side of cod rebuilding, not in dogfish rebuilding. Makes sense. Common sense. Look to the interests of cod, not dogfish. You've already seen the 2006 assessment update. Just look at the point on the far right-hand side. When I saw that point, I did somersaults down the hallway. Vindication. The fishermen are right. Look at that. It jumped up. Now, obviously, these are low. That's higher. But we do a three-year moving average. That's still low. The curve is still low. So I'm waiting anxiously for 2007. Oh-ho! 2007 occurs, and there's the next point. Drop a little bit. Okay, makes sense. They go up and they go down. It's just in the instruct area biomass estimate for the bottom fold survey. Again, large females, not all biomass. But now, three-year moving average, the line's going up. Paul Grego showed us some more good news when he provided the 2008 assessment update. I'm guessing, I can't recall the exact number, but I think the point is around here, which is about 250,000 metric tons of the large females. If you average that new point in with this point and that point, you get up above 200,000 approximately. That's the target, you know, the targeting quotes. We have no federal target. The New England Council said 180,000 approximately. The Mid-Atlantic Council said 200,000. I think that's some of the history now. Anyways, there is no federal target, but regardless, if it's 200,000, we're rebuilt. 160,000 for the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, that's the target, not the threshold, so we're rebuilt. That's going to have interesting implications for the next meeting coming up this October. I cannot forget, I'm always reminded, where are the pups? Again, in the Commercial Fisheries News, they had an article on pups, and some scientists have done some great work on the reproductive physiology of spiny dogfish. What do you find within a female when you take her and you dissect her? They found in this particular case that from this one particular female, all of those different stages of dogfish, pups, were in different stages of gestation. And they made the point that spiny dogfish, well, like I said, if spiny dogfish give birth to pups year-round, the question is raised whether that reproductive phenomenon matters to the management of the species. I suppose so. Anyways, more work will be done on this. We'll be relying on the good advice and the technical work, analytical work done by Paul Rago and company down at the Northeast Fishery Science Center. All right. So, rebuild. Set that aside for a second. Why do we want to rebuild dogfish? Competitors and predators to 440 million pounds or 200,000 metric tons. Soft size, just females, greater than 80 centimeters. That's believed to maximize the average recruitment used as a proxy for BMSY. Why do we have to do that? We have to. Ecological considerations be damned. What are the implications of the Magnuson Act reauthorization with acceptable catch levels and accountability measures and everything else? We don't know yet. I'm going to assume the worst case scenario. Why? Because that's generally what happens with National Standard Number 1 guidelines in terms of the rules of the road that we have to live by. I'm assuming they're going to be more restrictive and they're going to be inflexible. I could be wrong. We'll see. I'm going to assume the worst case scenario for now at the federal level, at the council level. Optimism? Okay, ASMFC. As far as I'm concerned, that's the only reason for optimism on dogfish management. Yeah, it's a pain for the fishermen who have federal permits. You have a federal permit, you've got to live by federal rules regardless of where you fish, and therefore the council management measures are, or the federal measures, the services measures, are a curse to you. But that's the way it is, and that's the way it will be, unless you give up your federal permit temporarily and then get it back. And you can, thank goodness for that. Otherwise, there'd be no optimism, there'd be no HMSC on dogfish, it would all be the National Marine Fisheries Service. By the way, I should point out, Chris has already pointed this out, two addenda, The highlight is that the state's looking at state-by-state quotas so we can manage our individual shares to be determined in a way that makes sense for the benefit of our individual states. In Massachusetts, we had 600 pounds May 1. We did that through regulation. Then we bumped it up to 2,000 tons beginning September 1. And to our great surprise, the fish week closed not too long afterwards. It's a regional quota for the northern states, but it closed very soon. I said, well, how come? We delayed the 2,000-pound trip limit until the price of dogfish became higher so the fishermen would get more value from their dogfish catch, but it appears that dogfish have been so extremely available that throughout the entire spring, winter, spring, and summer, that 600 pounds are being landed consistently by fishermen finding whatever and then bringing them in and getting some money for them, 22 cents, pound, whatever. And therefore, 600 pounds, the bycatch amount being landed, almost took the entire, well, it didn't take the entire quota, of course, we share it with the other states, but it was significant. So, what do we do? This child obviously is thinking the right way. He obviously is the child of a commercial or recreational fisherman employing the services of his dog to pray. Makes sense, right? Dog fisherman. Praying for some way out of this mess, okay? And frankly, these look like they're singing or they're laughing. I think they're likely laughing. And it's a sad tale to tell. And there are some ways that we can move collectively as a group of states, working with the National Marine Fisheries Service. I'm thinking of the regional office in Gloucester. Okay, I don't think there's anyone here from the regional office in Gloucester, right? But there's Paul, not representing the regional office, Paul's representing the science, with whom I've worked for many, many years. And I've got a great working relationship. As a matter of fact, Paul took some time not too long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, to sit down with me to walk me through the assessment. So I learned a lot from Paul. Anyways, I got it. That's where we are. And to make matters even stranger, let me point out one other thing, and this is what this group has to pay attention to. Environmental organizations in particular, and other nations, Germany, have tried to have dogfish listed through CITES. If they do that, it has tremendous implication on international trade. The concern is that dogfish are perhaps, are endangered. And the National Marine Fisheries Service, to its credit, said, no, it's not endangered. So the National Marine Fisheries Service did not support CITES listing. However, when they had their meeting in Washington, D.C. or wherever, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service must have struck an agreement with somebody, with some nation, and they supported. They supported other nations' desire to have it listed as part of CITES, which would obviously destroy the markets overseas, or at least make it harder and harder for processors to sell their product overseas, and that would have tremendous consequences for Mid-Atlantic and New England fishermen. So that's something, that's one particular issue you can focus on collectively. I'll talk about that a little bit more later on. So with that said, I guess I'll entertain questions. I have maybe 2 minutes.
Sorry.
Okay, good. So maybe 10 minutes. Just come on up.
Thanks, Dave. Jim Lovgren. Appreciate your presentation and your work and the research you've done on this, David. It's an excellent job there. I want to remind you that when you talk about codfish and the mortality, 5 dogfish of cod to 2 million fish, and then you look at summer flounder, and it's 40 million fish, okay? And presently, and for a number of years, summer flounder has been a much more valuable fishery than codfish. We are in the middle of looking at a shutdown of the summer flounder fishery, okay? We look and we say, what happened to recruitment of summer flounder? Why is it flat? Well, more than half of the babies, more than half of the recruitments are eaten by dogfish. There it is. It's documented. That's best scientific information available. Let's keep that in mind because that's National Standard 2, using best scientific information available. So we have a fish out here, and my question will come here. We have a fish here, okay, that is set a target, okay, the biological target is 3 times higher than its original observed level back in the 60s before there was a fishery for it. And really, the U.S. fisheries were minimal at that time, including the foreign fisheries. If there was ever an idea of what that ecosystem looked like, and that is science from the Science Center, okay, with the species compositions of ground fish and so forth, okay, Massachusetts was concerned, like you said, they had an eradication program in the 60s, and that population was a third of what it is now. Okay? They knew what it was doing to other species. When I was on the council, I watched, when they shut that fishery down, for the next 2 years, every species that we were managing on the Mid-Atlantic Council went flat. The rebuilding just went flat. It flatlined. Stopped recruitment. And they really, it's been rebuilding very slowly. The question is, then, we talk about, because we have to rebuild this. Okay? We have to rebuild this according to the best scientific information available. Okay? Well, that scientific information is saying we have to rebuild it to a certain target.
Then we have reached the target, so we gotta rebuild.
Regardless, my question is the validity of the target, because that target was an artificially created target, okay, by the destruction or the depletion of the groundfish stocks and many other species. The species composition was weighed in favor of the Alaskan branches in the 80s. They're basing the target on that. The 20% dogfish population that they saw in the 60s is more like best scientific information available. That is where the biological target is. It brings an ethical question of what species composition do we want in the ocean? Now, you quoted a number of papers here from Woods Hole, okay? Let me quote one. You've heard me quote it before, but let's get this on the record, because this is another one from Steve Murawski. From his paper in 1992, Multi-Species Size Composition, A Conservative Property of Exploited Fishery Systems. His conclusion, this is documented in the takeover to George's Banks by the Alaskan branch. Given the current high abundance of skates and dogfish, it may not be possible to increase gadoid and flounder abundance without extracting some of the current stand-in stock. He was advocating right then for a reduction in the dogfish population. And Steve, you know, is one of the top scientists in this country. Now, somehow, all of that science is forgotten. It's gone. That's best scientific information. It's being ignored, okay? An enormous expense to the fishing industry, which is being depleted. We are the ones depleted. We are the ones who are no longer at our biological threshold. We're way below it. Okay? If we're going to survive, dogfish have to be depleted. And I don't mean depleted. Okay? They have to be brought down to a reasonable level. Okay?
That's why the states go with a small-scale directed fisheries as opposed to something large-scale. I don't think we'll ever get back to large-scale. A small-scale is sensible. The question, therefore, is what is the upper limit of a small-scale fishery? And if that's what the HMSC will be further debating.
The question is, is the biological target right or is it wrong? Are we dealing with a biological target that is, it's attainable, okay? But what is the cost of attaining it and maintaining it to other fisheries while we bankrupt our industry? Because you can say we have to reach that target. We don't have to reach that target. That target should be lower, okay? Plain and simple. Anybody with half a brain can see that target should be lower because it's costing us too much. You, what's the cost to cod? What's the cost to summer flounder, herring, mackerel? I'm offshore and I see the bottom blanketed with mackerel. Okay? And right next to them are tons of dogfish. Now the mackerel population is decreasing and decreasing. Okay? It's in serious trouble at this point. And these are little tinker mackerel like that. Those dogfish are just eating them up. What is the cost of that? And when are we going to change it? Is it going to take a change in the president so we get rid of the politicization of science? Because that's what we have right here.
Well, I think it comes down to ecosystem-based management, because if we manage in a true ecosystem-based management way, we could deal with those particular issues. However, how do you manage in that way when we have the Magnuson Act reauthorization that is still thinking single-species management? That is one of our principal problems, and it's a tremendous hurdle to jump over. Right now, ecosystem-based management, for all practical purposes, means, and this is my own slanted view, my own biased view, it means, in the minds of many people, if you're ecosystem-based managing, you're managing in a precautionary way, and you have many marine protected areas that include reserves, that's not really ecosystem-based management. Unfortunately, some people think that way, and if that kind of thinking dominates and prevails, it will prevent us from, you know, addressing the point you just made. How do you make some reasoned decisions in the minds of some people, common sense decisions, to give a little to get a little? We're not doing away with spiny dogfish. We're just dropping them down potentially to lower levels of abundance, all in the interest of trying to protect and rebuild the codfish. The problem, of course, is what analyses will there be that we can turn to that would enable us to make those kinds of decisions backed up by analytical work? It's modeling work. It's tough stuff. And I don't know if the center is in a position to do that kind of work now, or if they will be in the future. Certainly they've got a large ecosystem group down at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, Michael Fogarty and others. I would hope that, you know, their group would be able to work closely with Paul and his group to try to come up with some means by which we can answer this question that we continue to struggle with.